We've been looking in the book, the great book of Nehemiah, and tonight we come back to the second chapter in the story of a man that I had said about Nehemiah as we study at this time, that he was a great leader. He was a great man who God gifted, certainly, and gave him certain strengths that Nehemiah was ready to, able, willing to use and give to God and allow God to use them. So I think of Nehemiah's leadership of both the side of man and the side of God. He was willing and able to use the gifts that God gave him, but also he was always dependent on God and knew that the strength that he had and even the abilities that Nehemiah had was from God. And he had that unique combination, that sense of passion for what he believed and what he wanted and what he felt, but also the ability to influence others and to draw them into that. His story is one of great faith, but also great perseverance. It wasn't that Nehemiah just was a bright flash in the sky and then he was gone. He's an example of perseverance. Although the job of rebuilding the wall, that is the main part of the story of Nehemiah, doesn't take that long. Probably about 2 months, 59, 58 days. But a lot of other things about Nehemiah show us a man who had an incredible perseverance about his approach to life and his personality. Let's pick up the story and read in Nehemiah chapter 2. And tonight I want to read verses 11 through 20 as Nehemiah inspects the walls of Jerusalem. Let's hear that part of the story as we move on in this great book. All right, am I going to advance or are you? Okay, great. Thank you. Hey, Nehemiah chapter 2, 11 through 20. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few men. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding on. By night, I went out through the valley gate toward the jackal well and the dung gate, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on toward the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was not enough room for my mount to get through. So I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me and what the king had said to me. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. But when Sanballat and the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard about this, they mocked and ridiculed us. "What is this you are doing?" they asked. "Are you rebelling against the king?" I answered them by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it." Well, upon hearing the news that Jerusalem was unsafe back in Babylon, Nehemiah, feeling sad and broken and grieving, he went in through this 4-month process of praying and seeking God about this great problem. His heart was broken by it, and so he begins to grieve. And he begins to feel the heaviness of the news of the walls of Jerusalem, and so he's grieving. But while he's doing that, he is constantly calling out to God and praying that God would act, that God would do something, that somehow that God would allow there to be a change in the circumstances. Way back in Jerusalem, 500 miles away from where he lived in the city that he knew had belonged to his forefathers long ago. They were no longer able in Jerusalem to oversee their own things because they had no protection from the outside. The walls of the city had been broken down in many places, and so they were unsafe from their enemies, and Nehemiah had been grieving about that and praying about that, also waiting for God to move. His heart was broken by the conditions of his people. And finally, God gave Nehemiah an opportunity. God gave Nehemiah a door, an open door, in order to make a difference. And that door was, he came before the king, the cupbearer, and everything changed for Nehemiah. When he came before the king recognized and was concerned about what Nehemiah looked like. He was doing his job, but he had a sad face, a countenance, and the king was concerned and sympathetic, and he was willing to listen to what was bothering Nehemiah. So Nehemiah had the open door. He had the opportunity to share his passion and his heart. And when he did so, God used that as a great place of change in his life. So much so that the king even told Nehemiah, I'll help pay for you to go back to Jerusalem, and we'll pay for the materials to rebuild the gates of the city. And this amazing Persian king becomes a great friend and benefactor of the Jewish people. Well, at that point, we know that God was working in Nehemiah's heart and life. At that point in time, Nehemiah knew that it wasn't just his talent or ability that opened the door for this ministry, although God used his faithfulness and that he was a trusted person to the king, but Nehemiah knew and he acknowledged that the open door was because of God. And all throughout the book of Nehemiah, he is constantly acknowledging that it's God who makes it happen. It's God that gives the opportunity. If you look back again, a few verses before in verse 8, we see that he constantly is saying that it's God who allows these things to happen. Because the gracious hand of God was upon me, the king granted my request. That's how Nehemiah describes it when he talks about it. He doesn't say, well, you know, because I had been faithful to the king and I had been a faithful servant, when the king talked to me, he saw that I was upset and he allowed me to explain, and then he allowed me to make the request, and I asked for all this and the king gave it to me. He doesn't say that at all. He says it was a gracious hand of God upon me. He knew that God was using him, but he also knew deeply that it was God's hand that brought this about. And because of his faithfulness, because of his prayer, because of his perseverance, because of these things, he knew that God had brought it about. Nehemiah becomes a leader with that as a foundation for his leadership, that it's God that makes it happen. It's God that does what is done, and he can be trusted. Nehemiah is a leader, and he will point people back to this hand of God in many ways. Well, God gives him an opportunity to take action. And so Nehemiah, as a leadership, begins to plan. Nehemiah is a planner. He's one who's good at organizing. And I said how there were gifts that Nehemiah had. One of them is organization. To be able to organize two things. One, the journey back to Jerusalem, and then to get all the resources together and available, and then to motivate the people and to deal with the challenges. All those things point to that Nehemiah was a good organizer, and God gifted him that way. He was able to bring together the purpose, the people, and the resources in order to make this great project happen. And he knows that he travels to Jerusalem here for the first time. And that had to take some planning too. I don't know how many went with him and don't know all the details, but it took a great deal of planning, and he was thinking ahead, and the king gave him letters of passageway and even sent the cavalry, some of the army with him, to give him safe passage. But all that took time and organization. But with all that, there's only four words given in the story to him getting back to Jerusalem, which was a big job, 500 miles and could have been a couple of months of travel. Don't know exactly in this case, especially if they rode horses. But there's only four words committed, I noticed, to the journey back to Jerusalem. Simply in verse 11, it says, I went to Jerusalem. Not a lot of detail, not a lot of fanfare. He went to Jerusalem. And you think, well, why is that significant? Or why does that even get my attention? Is that Nehemiah knew what was important. And he wanted to accomplish the big thing. The little details is not what Nehemiah was concerned about or took time even as this book is written. He wants us to see what happens next. He wants to see how God has worked. The important part for Nehemiah will come later. Well, when he got back to Jerusalem, we're told in the text that Nehemiah waited for 4 days. Three days before he does anything. He stayed there for 3 days. What was Nehemiah doing in the 3 days? I imagine that Nehemiah was watching people. He was watching the leaders of Jerusalem and kind of taking in how they had gotten to where they were at and the problems of Jerusalem. He was observing. He was learning. I just imagine it that he was kind of weighing the situation. He was seeing who he thought would be loyal, who he thought would really pick up the task and give their best and do their best. Maybe he's checking on the resources and what it's going to take to rebuild the wall and materials and people and the challenges that come also. But I also imagine about Nehemiah that Nehemiah has been praying. He's a man who is praying that God would work and God would act again, and he would give credit to God, praying also as he's been doing before, dependent on God. Nehemiah shows throughout the story a dependence on God, even with the gifts that God gave him and the success that God gave Nehemiah, still he shows that continuous dependence on God. And I think what a lesson for us in our lives is, whatever God allows and gives us, we're always dependent on him. And if we disconnect from that, then we disconnect completely from the presence and the power of God. Nehemiah continued to be dependent on God. And then we're told after 3 days that he chose a few men. Not a lot of men, just a few around him, probably from those he had been watching for those 3 days, men that he believed that he could confide in, he could trust, he could give responsibility to, he could oversee, and he knew their hearts that they would be good for the task. And so he chooses a few men. He doesn't tell a lot of other people. He doesn't draw in immediately. He doesn't come into Jerusalem and announce, we're going to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Doesn't say that at that time. He holds his tongue. He doesn't tell the people. He certainly didn't tell the leaders of Jerusalem. In fact, he held his tongue here, and he says that in verse 12, I set out during the night with a few men. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart. See, God had put something deep in his heart, and it wasn't his to tell until the right time, but he was holding that in there. Back there when he had been praying and fasting and grieving, in the city of Babylon, and finally God opened the door for him. As God opened the door, he put in his heart the call, the mission, the purpose. I think that was settled way back in Nehemiah when he was on his knees, when he was seeking God's spirit. And so he says in verse 12, I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. He was carrying this mission, this call, until the right time. But he acknowledges again, God put it in my heart. God's the one that called me and has given me the task. And again in verse 16, it says, the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. Nehemiah was wise to hold in that calling until the right moment. And that right moment did come as God began to show Nehemiah. He walked around and saw the gates that had been burned and the parts of the city wall that had been destroyed and those that were probably quicker to repair, and other places that were not at all as he walks around that night. Imagine what it is as he is inspecting the walls of Jerusalem that night. He gathers together in the moonlight a few of the men and a horse or a mule or somewhere, the mount, it says here, and he begins to look for himself. See, up till now, he has been relying on what his brother Hanani had said and what others had told him in the 3 days he had been in Jerusalem. But that night, God puts it in his heart, it's time to go, it's time to act, it's time to see for yourself. And so at night, with a few men, Nehemiah begins to go around the city. I wonder what his emotion was. I wonder what he felt and he saw to see for himself what had happened and how far down it had gone. I mean, he had heard the stories of the destruction of Jerusalem. I mean, he knows the story. He knows the history. He knows why. And back in his prayer, he acknowledges that the people had turned away from God and God had been patient, but God finally said, you will be destroyed because of your disobedience. But he also remembered that God said that after 70 years, I will bring the remnant back. The remnant had come back, but the security had not. And now he goes out to see the city for himself. He's not trying to draw attention to himself. He doesn't want people to know what he's doing. He doesn't explain what I'm doing, but he goes out and he holds again in his heart and he sees for himself the magnitude of the work that's going to be done. God is giving him, he gave him a mission, and now God is beginning to give him a vision for what needs to be done. He has the mission, and he has now this understanding, this vision of the wall and the insecurity and what needs to be done. And he's careful again. He's listening. He's learning. He's watching. He's measuring. Nehemiah is careful that he allows God to prepare him for this moment when he finally will step up and step out and say, it is time now. God has given us this mission, and it's time for us to act and to work. And in verse 17, we have the story turn. Then I said to them, I'm not sure if he said to the men around him or he began to say to the people of Jerusalem or to the leaders, but verse 17 is a turning point that he's taken it all in, he's prayed, he's asked God, he's acknowledged God, and then verse 17, it's time now, and he begins to share the vision, to share the mission, and then the vision, and he lays it out for them. You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins. He says to the people around him, all of you, those of you that live here, those of you that came back, and you see what it's like. Almost like Nehemiah says, are you tired of seeing it like it is? Are you tired of seeing the ruins around us? Its gates have been burned. And then he calls them and says, would you come? Would you join me? Would you join us as we rebuild the wall of Jerusalem? He puts out that request of the people of Jerusalem and those that occupy the area of Judea all around. He lays out the vision and he talks about the need and he gives the reason as those that are a part of the city begin to feel maybe the same urgency that Nehemiah does. And they begin to be stirred and excited. And yeah, you're right, Nehemiah. We're living as desperate people. And we should not be living this way. We should do something about this. And as they begin to pick up the pieces of the vision and the reason, it begins to take shape. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. And we will no longer be in disgrace. I notice here the words of Nehemiah, it's about we, it's about us. It's not about him. You know, so many times when you read the story of great things that are done, it sounds like one person did it. Like this king captured the whole city, or this king built this city, when it's really a whole lot of people who did. Well, Nehemiah has a sense. Even though God's using him as a leader, he has the sense that that God is using the people and all of them. This whole story of Nehemiah is a reminder of how important every person is to the kingdom of God. And as next time we look at the people who took their place along the whole wall of Jerusalem, you saw about every community that's named in Judea as taking responsibility for part of the wall. What a story about how God calls us all to be a part of the kingdom of God. And I've spoken before and talked about how important it is that we see ourselves as part of God's kingdom and God's army. There's nobody who's a believer that God says, well, they don't have a place along the wall of rebuilding the wall. But all of us are needed with whatever God gives us to do and gives us the opportunity to do. I noticed that in this part of the story, there's both, again, the human side and the divine side. The people need to do the work, and they need to pick up the stones and get them taken to the wall and set up in place and cut the trees down and bring the timber down to build the gates. But we also know that they can't do that without the full Spirit of God to help them. They haven't done it so far in the past, but now God says it's time. And the combination of the people's willingness and the power of God makes the task possible. Again, Nehemiah remembers and tells them that they are dependent on God. And this great task, as big as it is, and even with all the people who are cooperating and working, it won't happen unless God is in it and God is working. And so he reminds them one more time here of the hand of God to do this great thing. They must work. They must put their shoulder to the work, but God will be the one that will provide. And then verse 18 says, I also told them about the gracious hand of God upon me and what the king had said. So Nehemiah says to them, I mean, he said this before, but now it's before all the people who have been called to work. And he tells them and he reminds them, I want you to know that God's hand is in this. God is bringing this about. And that same gracious hand that stirred him way back in the palace in Babylon, now God is beginning to stir the hearts of all the people. And they're going to soon be picking up their shovels and picking up those stones and feeling in their heart that passion to do this thing that they should have done and that God could help them to do. And so they begin the work. They begin at one place in the wall, and then men after man after town of people are taking their places along the wall from all over Judea. They come to work. There's a stirring, a movement, an amazing thing that happens when God's people work together, when God's people have a passion, when God's people say, yes, we will do this, what God has stirred us to do and put in our hearts to do. And as with most projects, as they begin to work and people begin to build and give, there's also opposition. As always, there's people and places and forces that are at work to discourage God's people, whatever the project, whatever it is. There's opposition because Satan is stirring up people. And in verse 19, we have the naming of three groups of people who lived in the area, and they were close, and they were not supportive of this great project. Most of the people were, but yet there were three named here in verse 19. The opposition emerges as they were trying to work. See, the opposition losing control. God was moving in and beginning to work and change things, and the opposition did not want God to do what God wanted to do. And their names are mentioned here. Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite and Geshem the Arab. All three representing areas around Jerusalem. Places where they lived and they had their little mini kingdoms. They were chieftains and they wanted control over Jerusalem. As long as Jerusalem could not defend itself, then they basically could control the security and the commerce and even the religion of the area. And some of them claimed to care about the God of Israel, and they claimed to be Jews, but they were not committed in their hearts. And Nehemiah knew that. Nehemiah knew who they were. They knew they were pretenders, especially Sanballat, the Horonite. Because we read elsewhere about Sanballat and how he was a pretender. He pretended to be a Jew, but yet he was against all that God wanted to do. And Nehemiah saw right through it. Nehemiah knew that they were trying to destroy what God had placed in his heart to do. I mean, some signs were obvious as their people came, and it says that they mocked and ridiculed the work that was going on. I imagine at first look, the job looked pretty hopeless. I mean, just reading all the places where the work was done, which comes up in the next chapter, and you hear all those places and the names, and you think, wow, there's no way that they could rebuild with the resources they had the wall of Jerusalem. You think of how big that wall was in David's and Solomon's day. Back 300 years ago, how solid and big and amazing the wall of Jerusalem is. If you go to Jerusalem today, most of it is rebuilt, and there the old city is, and it's a massive wall. Those of that have had an opportunity to go there, it's. I mean, you see it from a distance, and it looks big, but boy, when you get closer and you look up to the top of the wall, it's an amazing place. Imagine what it was like that it was broken down, and Nehemiah rides around and he looks at it and it just looks almost helpless. If Nehemiah wouldn't have had that heart of God in him to say, this can be done, it would have been so easy for Nehemiah to say, oh, I never realized it was like that. How could we possibly do that? How possibly could we rebuild the walls of Jerusalem? But somehow God allowed Nehemiah to have vision and a lens that when he saw the massive challenge there, Nehemiah didn't give up. He didn't quit. He just began to work, and he began to call the people first to that first place. All right, we're going to rebuild this area right here. And then some more people came. Okay, you take the next 10 feet. You bring the blocks. And then a little bit, and a little bit, and a little bit, and a little bit, and more people came, and more people got the heart and the vision. And that massive protective wall began to go up and be built. And it was incredible. I mean, I think of what Nehemiah felt as he was doing it. And then when the mockers and the Sanballats and Tobiah and Geshem came, and they were standing back and just laughing. Nehemiah, what do you think you're going to accomplish there? You work all day, and you get 100 people to move that block from there over to there. Now you got one of a million blocks moved. Now, do you really think you can do this, Nehemiah? And they ridiculed him and mocked him. And the impact that had to be on the people, how Nehemiah had to be able to stave that off, both personally, but also as a leader in getting people to work. They mocked and they ridiculed. They became accusatory. They were trying to stir up all the political and military issues and the Babylonians and the Assyrians. They were trying to stir up the trouble. What is this you're doing? They said, are you rebelling against the king? I mean, they were pretty much saying, Nehemiah, if you rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, the king in Babylon's not going to put up with that, because then you're going to stand up and say, we're not going to do what the king tells us to. And that kind of fomenting disloyalty and rebellion is what they're trying to do. They were stirring up trouble within and without. They were trying to plant seeds to discourage God's people. You know, when you're trying to do what God wants you to do, there will be voices that will try to discourage. But, you know, God was there, and he knew it, and he knew how big the wall was and how many blocks. I said a million. I don't know how many blocks. God knew exactly what it would take to rebuild that wall. Nehemiah probably thought he did as he began to look and see and measure and all those things, but God knew. And God put within Nehemiah a determination. He was not going to let those voices of criticism, those voices of doubt, keep him from doing what God placed in his heart when God called him to go back and rebuild the wall. When their words were not enough, when they tried to stir up trouble and their words were not enough, then we know in future chapters in Nehemiah that they became more troublesome. They began to send people there to disrupt the work and to be critical. They tried to engage the kings around them to shut it down, and tried to send an emissary to way back to Babylon and tell them that these Jews are turning from you and disloyal. They tried everything they could, and then they even got to the point where they began to go and attack the people working. And we'll come to that story later on. How does Nehemiah handle it? Does Nehemiah kind of throw up his hands and say, "I guess it's too much. We can't do this." And does Nehemiah say, "No, the opposition's too much." What Nehemiah says is God is in this, and he's going to help us, and it's going to be done. Nehemiah just kept on faithfully persevering, not letting the negative people stop him. Nehemiah just kept saying, "Keep building, keep building, keep building." And later on, if you have to have a sword in one hand to protect yourself and a shovel in the other, just keep building, keep working, keep at it a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. Nehemiah had that sense that one step at a time, following God and obeying God is the thing to do, and God would give them success. This is how Nehemiah was a great leader, this great perseverance, and how he reacted to the opposition. Boy, it doesn't seem like Nehemiah was intimidated at all. He had to adjust the plan and the work, but he just kept on going. He kept on with this rugged perseverance. It says in verse 20, "I answered them by saying, 'The God of heaven will give us success.'" Wow. That's quite a statement for him to make. Now, he's made it in his heart, and he's made it to the people building, but now he's making it to the enemy, saying, "I want you to know God's going to give us success. God told me that." That's a confidence that Nehemiah had. First of all, he had that internal sense of confidence and knowing that God had spoken to him. And then he puts it into voice and for those that he's rallying. But then finally he says right to the enemy, "No, God's going to give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding." Again, he says, "We belong to God. This is his project. He can bring it through. He will do that." So he tells the enemies, "God will bring success. We're his servants. It's his wall. It's his city. We're going to start the rebuilding." And then Nehemiah also knows what's behind the opposition. We just get a little clue of it right here. "But you, as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it." See, these groups were wanting to control that city, and for some different political reasons and stories from the past, especially of the emergence of the Samaritans and their opposition to the rebuilding of the temple and also the walls of Jerusalem, and how that would be a very sore point all through down until we come to the New Testament time, and you have the Samaritans and what that means. Well, one of these men was basically Samaritan, and Nehemiah knows that. He sees that. He sees that they're going to make a claim. "Well, this is our city. This is our temple, and we'll make decisions about it." But Nehemiah tells him, "No, you have no part in that. You have no part in controlling and all those things." Nehemiah was able to have incredible faith, incredible endurance, and Nehemiah was able, incredibly, to keep his eyes on the prize, the eyes on what God called him to do. God gave him a mission, and he held to it, and it's a great story. Next time come together. Next week is our annual meeting. In the evening, we'll be in the fellowship hall. But then, Lord willing, the following week, we're going to look at the actual building of the wall and the incredible list of names of people who came to work. And they brought their families and their clans and their towns. And it's amazing when you looked at the whole project, that couldn't be rebuilt. I mean, how long would it take? But then when everybody works, everybody takes their place along the wall, how that was able to be accomplished, and we'll pick that up next time. Thank you for being here tonight. Debbie and I are planning to go to Ohio in the morning and be with my sisters and some other family members for my dad's 90th birthday on Tuesday. So we're really looking forward. I'm really looking forward to being there and having fun together and just having a special time. My sisters are all delighted and excited about planning this little thing Tuesday night. My dad doesn't want a big party, but they just got to do something like that. So they're planning something for him. And we're just looking forward to a great family time. And Lord willing, we'll be back Wednesday early afternoon and be back Wednesday evening and be here and be with you. So we hope you have a good few days and glad you're here tonight. God bless.